the most iconic documentary figures. With fresh visual styles and bold storylines, their works represent the new generation shaping the future of non-fiction cinema. The festival's international section this year stands out for its high-profile selections.
I submit to this festival because I read in their website they have this very strong care about human rights and children's rights, also about women filmmakers. So that's why I decided to submit, and then they select my film for the it's in the international competition.
Meanwhile, the Iranian section also reflects the nation's recent history.
This festival is the highest-ranking documentary festival in Iran and enjoys international prestige. That is why I chose to premiere my film here. It is a biographical documentary about a man with a clear vision, someone who left a lasting impact not only on our region, but far beyond.
This year's edition is defined by diversity. Works shaped by social issues, human stories, wartime experiences, and innovative visual approaches.
With celebrated veterans, ambitious newcomers, and international premieres, the 19th Cinema Verite Festival sets the stage for one of the most competitive and closely watched editions yet. Hisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
At least 100 anti-Palestinian abductees have been killed while in Israeli detention. That's according to a new report. It said many of the detainees are regularly subjected to torture, assault, medical neglect, and malnutrition.
After October 7th, Israel's systematic violence and torture against Palestinian prisoners increased rapidly, and this is not only reflected by the increase of fatalities, but also in the witnesses we hear from and the ex-prisoners. Gaza's prisoners are still subjected to more brutal and inhumane treatment, which was noticed more clearly since Ben-Gvir came into office. His policies are reflecting his own extremism.
Ben-Gvir, who oversees Israel's prison system, openly boasts about rising fatalities in Israeli jails. Those close to Ben-Gvir maintain that the hawkish Israeli minister is proud to have aggravated conditions for Palestinian abductees.
I was in prison for nearly 2 years, during which I was subjected to extreme torture and medical neglect. For 4 months, I had scabies, and they refused to give any medicine. Starvation was another method of torture. We would go for days without food, or with the minimum that kept us alive. We witnessed the death of many people inside the prison. One prisoner was Dr. Mossab Hania, who was tortured to death for his last name only.
In addition to the 18,500 documented arrests since October 2023, there are an unknown number taken as part of an Israeli policy of enforced disappearances. 2 years on, thousands of those disappeared from Gaza may no longer be alive. For the 110 Palestinian prisoners who never made it home, the suffering may have ended. However, for the thousands who are still behind the Israeli bars, the agony persists. Nada Ibrahim, Deir al-Balah City, Palestine.
Again, 120 people were murdered in a massacre by the RSF militia as they attacked a kindergarten, a village, and a hospital. Most of the dead were children aged 3, 4, and 5. The massacre against civilians had been conducted in the village of Kalogi in South Kordofan. Diplomats heard during the presentation of the new report on the humanitarian crisis in Sudan.
And sometimes the situation and the facts are distorted, so we want to shed light on the developments in the country, and also we know that now the UN is saying that Sudan is the largest humanitarian crisis, and so we would like to see why the situation is going in that direction, and what is the magnitude of this humanitarian crisis, and also what is the support that we can get from our partners in the international community.
The new report sheds further light on the UAE's technological and military assistance of the RSF militia. The report says that the shortest way to achieve peace and end the suffering of the Sudanese people is to hold the UAE accountable for its aggression. However, a recent EU Parliament resolution removed the mention of the UAE at the last minute.
The UAE are supporter of the RSF rebels, but after some diplomatic interventions by the UAE, the European Parliament opted to address its call on the world foreign countries that influence the conflict.
We will keep providing humanitarian aid to ease the suffering of the Sudanese people. Sustainable and safe delivery of humanitarian aid in Sudan remains to be an urgent need to ensure uninterrupted delivery of humanitarian aid.
On Tuesday, an aid convoy of the World Food Program was attacked in Hamra El Sheikh in North Darfur. It was the sixth such attack this year that has so far led to the killing of eight World Food Program workers since the beginning of the year.
It's the world's largest humanitarian catastrophe. 30 million people are dependent on humanitarian aid, 15 million of them children. There are 10 million internally displaced people in the country. We're active in Sudan in principle and want to increase our efforts. But there are regions like Al-Fashir that are inaccessible to safe access.
Two unprecedented humanitarian crises, famine and genocide, have been unfolding in Sudan and Gaza. Although witnessed by millions online, the international community remains unable and unwilling to stop them. Economic and political ties with the perpetrators and states supporting them, most notably the US and the UAE, seem to be more important than human lives in West Asia and Africa. Dieter Reinisch from United Nations in Vienna.
Iran is preparing to host a fresh and potentially decisive round of mediation between Pakistan and Afghanistan's Taliban regime next week, in what is being viewed as the most ambitious diplomatic effort yet to break the deadlock between the two hostile neighbors. The Tehran talks stand out due to the anticipated participation of China and Russia, signaling that leading regional powers now view the escalating Pakistan rift as a direct challenge to wider regional stability. The Tehran initiative follows deadly border clashes between the two uneasy neighbors and earlier rounds of negotiations in Qatar, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, none of which produced a breakthrough.
This is a significant development, and what makes the Tehran talks particularly noteworthy is the expected participation of China and Russia. Their involvement signals that major regional players view this standoff between Pakistan and Afghanistan not just as a bilateral issue, but as a potential threat to wider regional stability. Tehran is leveraging both its political weight and the presence of two regional powers to create pressure for dialogue and compromise.
This mediation effort follows recent visits by Iran's senior security and diplomatic officials, reflecting Tehran's urgency to calm rising tensions between Islamabad and Kabul.
Since we have seen the Israeli occupation in Palestine and we have seen the atrocities of Israel, we have seen a very positive, very impactful role of Iran in the region. Iran has started maintaining its foreign relation with other and neighboring countries. So I believe that Iran this time could be important mediator as compared to the other one, being in, as I have already mentioned, that immediate neighbor, being a state, a stakeholder, having projects with India, being a state. Because we have been blaming Afghanistan that their land is being used by India in creating proxies in Pakistan. So I believe this time we have a mediator that could play a better role than the previous ones.
In the run-up to next week's meeting, Iranian diplomats have intensified shuttle contact with both Pakistan and Afghanistan.
With tensions at their highest in years between Islamabad and Kabul, the Tehran mediation round will test whether coordinated pressure from Iran, supported by China and Russia, can open a path toward restoring trust and containing cross-border threats destabilizing the region. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
Across the crowded western areas of Khan Yunis, tent stretch is fragile shelters held up by one essential material, wood. Yet even the simplest material is denied to Gaza's displaced families. Wooden pallets, once lying discarded on the roadside, have become a treasure for anyone desperate to keep a tent standing against wind and rain. That's what Rami Ibrahim understood. With his worn-out saw and a rusty hammer, he set up a small makeshift workshop, salvaging every splinter he could collect. From sunrise to sunset, Rami and his children worked together, cracking boards apart, pounding nails, and joining short pieces into long, sturdy supports, repurposing scraps into the pillars that can hold fragile shelters standing.
Most of us now live in tents, as no caravans or suitable housing units have arrived. While many people break down these pallets for firewood, I try to collect them from those who fetch them after aid or commercial deliveries. My children and I carefully transform these scraps into something usable. I even built my own workshop structure from this wood. As the weather grows harsher, at least when people lose their tents, they can find an affordable alternative.
Here in Gaza, wood has become a rare commodity, not for furniture, but for survival. With materials blocked by Israel, the scraps of wood recycled here are the only option for many displaced families to hold their tents from collapsing.
For the displaced families, the fear is no longer limited to Israel's bombs. Even the weather can tear their tents down. On a nearby road, Abu Ihab has just got a few wooden boards from the workshop. He lays them to rebuild a new tent after his previous shelter collapsed under the brutal conditions. With only a handful of boards, he hopes this rebuilt structure will withstand the winds this time, offering his family even a fragile sense of stability.
This isn't the first time I've used these wooden boards. They cracked during the last storm and caused my tent to collapse. Now, I got them again from a nearby workshop. But we really need stronger wood and tarps. What would truly help are proper housing units. Yet, they still haven't arrived, leaving us trapped in this endless cycle.
For Abu Ihab and countless others, the meaning of refuge has long been lost in the ruins of the homes Israel destroyed. No matter how many times they rebuild or reinforce their tents, the struggle remains the same. Families continue searching for materials or any form of proper shelter, but what they truly need remains out of reach as long as Israel blocks the entry of essential construction supplies. Ahmed al-Najjar, Khan Yunis, Palestine.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
A very good day to you, and thank you for joining us here on Iran Radio, where every broadcast is crafted to bring you closer to what matters. And here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. In total, 25 prophets are mentioned in the Holy Quran in different surahs. Prophet Moses, or Musa in Arabic, peace be upon him, is mentioned 136 times in the Holy Quran, making him the most mentioned prophet of all in the Holy Book of Allah. The literal meaning of the word Quran is the which is being read. The word Quran is repeated 70 times in the Book of Allah itself. The month of Ramadan is the only month of the year mentioned in the Holy Quran in verse 185 of Chapter Al-Baqarah, second chapter. This voice is reaching you from the capital Tehran, ready to share a lineup filled with meaning with you. Our upcoming program is Viewpoints, a powerful roundtable where today's most pressing issues from the Islamic world take center stage. From religion to politics, culture to society, we unpack what matters most with a special focus on the latest headlines from Muslim communities across the globe. Following this program, we have another segment of radio productions for this hour. Then it's time for The Teacher, a deep, enriching review of Islamic and Shia theology and ethics. Join our hosts and scholars as they walk us through key principles that shape a conscious and faith-filled life. Coming up next, it's Viewpoints. Stay with us.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints with me, Atar, the host of this program. Shaykh Hussein and Sister Zainab are over here in today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah and assalamu alaikum to your dear listeners.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother, and to all the listeners.
So, here and there in the news networks and the social media, we hear about the coming attacks of United States of America to Venezuela, which is not taking place yet, okay? It's only a threat. The U.S., fighters are over there, okay? Trump is every day threatening and does not answer, okay, whether to attack Venezuela or not. Now, the major question is that why Venezuela must be considered as a threat for U.S. Sister Zainab, let's start with you.
Okay, so where do I start? So obviously Venezuela itself is one of these, obviously for the U.S., especially for Trump, very threatening and must be so irritating and annoying to Trump. Okay. A character such as Trump, because Venezuela, and I'm going to compare Venezuela to Iran and to China and to Russia.
Uh-huh.
So these are countries that do not bow to the U.S. Hegemony.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, these countries will be have already signaled in the what we call the multipolar world. And what is it about these sorts of countries? So these are countries that obviously will do their own thing.
Uh-huh.
And especially so Venezuela stands against this of U.S. hegemony, is pro-Palestine. We know that under Maduro anyway.
Yes, Maduro.
And
right.
as is Iran. But the other thing is obviously these are hugely powerful countries. So Venezuela is very powerful. It has the world's largest oil reserves.
Okay.
It has the eighth largest natural gas reserves.
Wow.
And we've got this whole thing, the typical sort of U.S. meddling, threatening, sanctions, this sort of whole game playing mm-hmm. out, which is almost, it's so predictable, it's almost boring. So what do? They sort of choose some sort of random and unimportant opposition leader.
Okay.
And what's the plan of this? Her name is Maria Corina Machado. She apparently, so her plan is, and you can see videos of her talking about just selling off Venezuela's resources, like $1.7 trillion of it.
Isn't it the lady that won the Nobel Prize, this peace
yeah.
Nobel?
That too.
Wow, okay.
And that also gives us
okay,
the
okay, hand in hand,
uh-oh.
Yeah. Okay, that's
we
right.
know what's coming.
And we know that Trump was supposed to win the Nobel Prize, okay?
Yeah.
One of the candidates was him, okay?
He's very upset, actually.
Okay, he's very upset at why, okay. Okay, that's it. Go on.
Yeah, so, and then we've got this going on, so we know that Venezuela is very powerful, stands against the U.S., and the other thing with these countries, so when we look at Venezuela, obviously the U.S. Takes issue with Venezuela anyway,
okay.
because it is powerful and because it stands against it and because it's so rich in resources and everything.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, we know the Western hegemony wants to plunder.
Okay.
This is the old colonial mentality. It has not stopped. This is ongoing.
All right.
But the other thing is, they probably, and obviously they'll be thinking, now if they hit Venezuela, if they can somehow harm Venezuela, meddle, sort of cause it to just turn into a basket case like Syria, basically, they're also hitting one of their other sort of enemies, because China is at the moment Venezuela's largest creditor one of its major destinations for oil. So obviously, if they can interfere with hit Venezuela, that will also have impact on China.
Okay.
So these are all sort of linked together in a sense.
Okay.
Which
That's
is
it.
Trying to destroy the big players in the multipolar world.
So it's not easy attacking Venezuela right now. So
geographically speaking, it's close to the United States of America, okay? But ideologically, it's very much close to you, to China and Russia and Islamic Republic of Iran. So why Islamic Republic of Iran? I mean, this is a major question, okay? Nobody during the history of the world, when you go out and check out the references, will find ties between Venezuela or, for example, Cuba and Islamic Republic of Iran. Why is it so?
That's a good question, actually, but it hasn't been like that always.
All right.
In one sense, Venezuela is like Iran. What sense? In the sense that during Cold War, Venezuela was almost the only country in the Latin America that was anti-communist, and it was the biggest American player in that region.
Okay.
Like Iran, which before the revolution used to be American milking cow in
All
the
right.
region. And when every Arab country sanctioned Israel for oil, this Mohammad Reza Pahlavi gave oil to Israel.
All
so
right.
you see how much of an ally Iran was to America in during the Cold War. And Venezuela was used to be like that, like Iran. But then there was a shift in the history. In Iran, it was through the revolution. In Venezuela, it was through the election of Chavez.
Okay.
So, and there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. And the reason is that U.S. does not accept allies, dignified allies. U.S. accept milking cows, submissive servants.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
And people start hating themselves, like nations, start feeling that they have been disrespected. When you call a nation milking cow,
All right.
when you treat a nation like they realize generation after generation, these people are just plundering our resources and they are not contributing to the real development of this country, the thing that happened in Iran.
Yes.
So if U.S. would engage. There's something.
That's why Mohammad Reza Pahlavi in the final year of his
He
got mad as well. Yeah. Okay. We are giving service to you, and now you are not doing anything to
us.
Okay.
He has started admitting it.
Yes.
That after being a buddy for U.S., we don't have, we don't see any concrete or tangible results.
Yes.
It's still the same dynamic is going on, that they take our resources and they sell us their second-hand products. Anyways, so for the Venezuelan, so I want to say that the reason that Venezuela shifted from being a U.S. proxy in Latin America,
yes,
in the Cold War, in the time of difficulty, the reason that they shifted to an anti-American nation was U.S. treatment of these nations.
Okay.
That they downgrade these nations, they act in a, there's something called in international relations, it's called the engagement policy. They don't apply engagement policy to treat them fairly, to give them real development. They create a facade of like the market for our goods and products, like they do with the milking cows in our region. So they sell them, flood the country with American products, but they do not give them sustainable development. They do not give them factories. They do not give them industries.
And they are South America.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
have you ever watched the cartoon animation Up?
Yeah.
There are two kids, you know, showing the world map to each other. It says, this is America, but this is South America. I mean, okay, such an ideology in terms of we are North America,
so we
are superior to South America.
You have always having the Latinos and the whites, so Latinos,
That's right.
obviously.
Okay.
So after all these years of having a sense of shame and embarrassment, Venezuelan nation said, okay, let's have some agency and do something, and they brought Chavez into power, and that started the U.S. hatred again like a child that gets angry with someone.
Okay.
And instead of rethinking, what have I done with this ally that they shifted against me? And instead of, after the Islamic Revolution, people in the U.S. would say, what did we do wrong with these people that they have shifted against us?
Okay.
The coup against Mossadegh and all the things that we did.
Yes.
Let's change course. Let's do some cooperation in the creation of human civilization. Instead of that, they say, okay, now they have turned into our enemies. Let's crush them.
Okay.
And this pushed Venezuela to create alliance with Russia, China, and Iran.
Yes.
Back to your question, why Venezuela is friends with Iran?
Yes.
Because we have shared the experience of being a U.S. ally, but he treated us in a miserable way, and we decided to have our own agency.
The revolution that took place in Iran 1979, how much do you think was rooted in the ideology of Latin American countries like Cuba, like Venezuela, or something like that?
The revolution in of Iran, because it happened before the fall of Soviet Union, so people were still living in the bipolar world.
Bipolar world, that's right.
After fall of the Soviet Union, U.S. got prominent position, like it was, and it has never been in human history an empire this powerful. So people were still waiting to see what happens to Iran. So it did not have immediate effect because there have been other revolutions that the U.S. had sabotaged and had changed.
All right.
And that's why Imam Khomeini called the seize of the American embassy the second revolution. Because the U.S. wanted to redirect Iranian revolution.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. So because this is a pattern that they do. They do not take involvement immediately. They just wait for the sentiment to be discharged. And then when the right time comes, they install somebody who is westernized, who is in line with their interest, and then they redirect the whole thing.
That's right.
That's why they have two options. They have regime change and they have behavior change. So they tried regime change Iran, they failed. They tried behavior change of Iran, they failed. And after that, these nations, independent nations, they realize, okay, it is possible.
That's right.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Again, the same scenario as they called, I could remember George Bush called, for example, Iran and this and that, the axis of devil or something?
Evil, yeah.
Evil, that's right. So here they call, for example, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela as the axis of, we can say, that's right, authoritarianism.
You always have a sprinkle of democracy exporting, and we care about the dictatorship in this country as if their own allies are not dictatorship in our region. So it's not about democracy, but you always have this in the pretext that the Americans put forth for their intervention.
Okay.
Democracy is...
And the U.S. is really threatened that the message of revolution of Iran reaches South America, but North Americans want not. I mean, this is really, really historically shocking that, for example, how geographically speaking, for example, the message of your own people from the same continent will not reach you, but the messages from the other continent will reach you so far.
Yeah, well, obviously the propaganda started regarding Venezuela. It's been ongoing for a while. And then there's really crazy comments, absolutely, just incredible. So they took the typical things. Obviously, they're saying that there's Russian agents, Iranian agents in Venezuela, and that even Hamas and Hezbollah are operating in Venezuela.
What's the problem with that? I mean, being, for example, Iran's or Hamas agents being in Venezuela. What's the problem?
Well, for them, because they started the revolution or whatever the shift that they started, because they wanted to say that we have national agency. they labeling them in such
a
way.
With
the
foreign medley.
To make them another product.
Okay, yeah. Sister Zainab, go on, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, obviously, they've got, this is the one thing they want to take away from the fact that this is Venezuela's own. Well, at the moment, there's a response to the threats by Trump, obviously. There's huge rallies in the country ongoing, even though the sort of this opposition leader, this not very important person, because a Nobel Peace Prize means nothing these days anyway.
All right.
But the interesting thing is, I was reading a comment by a sort of non-Venezuelan person who said that you had visited Venezuela maybe a couple of decades back, and was saying how, although, you know, and he obviously was not dealing with the normal people, but the middle, the huge middle class, or also this of the poorer class.
Yes.
He was obviously talking with the wealthy, the upper class, upper middle class, who seemed to be having a really good lifestyle. And he was sort of thinking, well, you know, and obviously we know that this is the other thing. If the US or the West wants to intervene in any way, do this, whatever is a soft war, or just somehow have a regime change from within a country, try and do this, they will target also the ones who are sort of maybe a bit more pro-West. And typically, these are the ones who really just want to enjoy, let's say, more stuff.
Okay.
So they'll be quite happy to have their market, as you say, flooded with sort of US things and just increase their luxurious lifestyle. Because obviously the tendency is that they maybe don't care for what's happening to the rest of the population. That goes for any country.
Yes.
We have a bit of this sort of total indifference. But, you know, the Maduro has huge popular support.
Yes.
And these the elite, the wealthy elite, well, I won't call them elite, just the wealthy class, they're the same everywhere.
Upper middle class.
That's
this
right.
This is, again, in U.S. international relations, they invest a lot on upper middle class or higher than that in order to take their agenda along the way. So,
That's it. Sometimes I think to myself that historically speaking, South America is taking a revenge, a historical revenge from the white supremacy of the North America.
There is
the Native Americans, we can't say the land which belonged to them once, okay, is now being occupied by white supremacy. And now during the presidency of Trump, you know, this is becoming aggravated because he is... We can't say, how can I say, the model for white supremacy.
An icon of white supremacy. Yes, it is. It somehow is true. The historical background is there, okay?
Okay.
The divide is there already.
Mm-hmm.
But again, some people would bring this up in order to say that these people are some fanatic. They are, because of some historical revenge, they are destroying themselves. More than that, I believe this is something that people like, and that is that they want independence. They want resources to be for themselves. And when it comes to the current president of the United States, he has such an impulsive personality.
Yeah.
He has said it time and again that peace through a strength. Have you heard this? He says that he wants, and he has this thing, to make a reckless, impulsive move and then see the results. So if you ask about the future of what's going to happen in Venezuela-American relationship, I don't see it very remote that Americans make a reckless move. Like, for example, especially learning from Zionists, if they want to apply one surgical operation, like for surgical assassination, they may attempt to kill Maduro or whatever, things like that, in order to make the move, and then they see the result. If they don't see any pushback, they go forward.
They go forward.
This is the personality of Trump.
Yes.
And he said it in several times, like there's this very good book, War, that is about the personality of this guy. And he says that he believes in throwing a punch and then seeing what happens. And by that assessment, he comes forward.
Okay.
If you don't take the right measure against the first punch, then you're gonna receive more punches along the way.
All right, that's it. As Ayatollah Khamenei in his visit to Maduro has said that to assume U.S. invincible is a major oversight, you know, okay? So, and this has always been, even Fidel Castro had a visit to Ayatollah Khamenei on that time, and they admired him and Ayatollah Khamenei as a role model for being anti-hegemonic, and we can say anti Western hegemony in the West, and this is really this must be outstanding for the people of the Muslim lands, that how non-Muslims rely on a Muslim figure over here to be the role model for them for anti-hegemony. Okay.
Also, you see the pictures of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah in Venezuela.
Yes.
They see these people, Sardar Soleimani, General Soleimani. They see these people.
Nelson Mandela had a visit also to Ayatollah Khamenei.
Yes.
He said, "Nelson, so my leader, okay."
Yeah.
In a video, Nelson Mandela calls Ayatollah Khamenei my leader, and this is really outstanding. Okay.
So, because to keep a revolution on its track for 40 years in a world dominated by U.S. is very difficult.
Okay.
I mean, it has been proven to be impossible, because U.S., what it does, it does redirect revolutions very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Egypt. They said, okay, we want to have our country back. They toppled this person. The other person came. It's even worse than the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
So this is because of the leadership and the steering of this thing throughout all the ups and downs of the international relations. That's why they see people who are leaders themselves, they realize the strategic significance of this.
Ayatollah Khamenei, in part of his speech, in the visit to Maduro, says that in the past, when some Islamic countries decided to confront the Zionist regime by refusing to sell their oil, Westerners created uproar with the excuse that Islamic countries are making political use of the oil. However, today, in complete harmony with American policies, the same countries are using oil as a weapon in cooperation with some members of the OPEC and some countries in our region, which are harmed by these policies themselves.
Yeah, no surprise.
Mastery over the history of the world. May Allah safeguard our leader, all the freedom seekers all across the world, and those justice seekers all across the world, whether Muslims or non-Muslims. Sheikh Hussein and Sister Zainab, thank you very much for a nice elaboration regarding what's happening in Venezuela. It was very kind of you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for being with us with the program Viewpoints. If you have any question, if you want to visit more about our other programs, please visit our website at iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Do not forget us in your supplications and du'as. Fi amanallah.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
I know that you could easily take away everything you've given me, and I try to remember not to take anything for granted, 'cause I know that one day suddenly this will all come to an end. So my last wish is for you to be pleased with me.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
We once had a teacher, the teacher of teachers. He changed the world for the better and made us better creatures.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to the program, The Teacher. Please stay with us.
What will we say?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program, The Teacher, an analysis on the most important Islamic teachings. I am Atta, the host of this program, Sheikh Danish and Sheikh Fadai. Two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom are in today's studio. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Danish. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, thank you.
And Sheikh Fadai, assalamu alaikum to you.
Assalamu alaikum, alhamdulillah.
So, how are you doing, Sheikh Fadai?
Thank you. Thank
and Sheikh Danish, what about you?
Alhamdulillah.
Thank you very much for accepting my invitation to the program, The Teacher. For today's discussion, we want to talk about Sakarat al-Maut. It is roughly translated into English as the agonies of death. It refers to the difficulties that come upon a dying person at the time of death. Okay, so some people might say that when we are dead, our body is not going to feel anything. So why there must be some hardships or the agonies upon us, okay? What is the main reason? And scientifically speaking, can it be approved or not? That, for example, there are some agonies or hardships on the dead person. Sheikh Fadai, let's start with you. So what does it refer to exactly, Sakarat al-Maut?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, the one which feels is not the body, the soul.
Okay.
Even in this world, you know, when I, for example, touch a very hot, I don't know, kettle or pot.
Yes.
I feel that heat and I endure and I feel hardship. But the one which feels is not my fingers, is my soul.
Mm-hmm.
The finger is instrument.
All right.
Why do I say that? Imagine that, just think about the process of medical anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to surgery room and they do that on your hand, and again, you just touch that pot or kettle, do you feel anything? No.
No.
Because that instrument doesn't work.
Okay.
You know, the body is connected to the brain. The brain is the head of the body, body organs.
Okay.
And the brain is connected to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
The main boss, the main head, is the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Soul is the one who feels. Because of that, after the one is dead, he doesn't feel anything because this connection is caught.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sakaratul Maut, when the one feels that, first of all, he's not dead, yet he's not dead. He's alive. He is dying in Sakaratul Maut.
All right.
And it starts, according to our Rivayat, soul taking starts from the foot toes, the fingers of foot.
All right.
And ends to the head.
To the
and we have in Quran, فَلَوْلَا إِذَا بَلَغَتِ الْحُلْقُومِ, when the soul taking reaches the throat. Reaches
the throat.
It started
so it's coming from down to up, okay?
Yes.
Okay.
This connection, but organ by organ, first of all, the foot, then the, I don't know, stomach, then up to this throat.
All right.
And the reason is that even the last minutes of your life, you would have the opportunity to do istighfar, to say something.
Okay.
Even the last second.
So it doesn't start with your mouth.
Yeah, it doesn't start with the
okay.
mouth.
All right.
So, you know, this connection, when it is caught, yes, after that, you don't feel.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the body doesn't feel in the grave. But the head is alive. The boss is alive. The boss is soul.
All right.
Even in the grave, your soul, the one who used to feel in that in the previous world,
all right,
now is feeling, but let alone to Sakaratul Maut,
mm-hmm.
that the one is alive and is feeling everything by the soul.
Okay, that's it. Thank you. So, is Sakaratul Maut or the agonies of death for everyone, Sheikh? I mean, whether believer or disbeliever, we must experience death at the end of our life, okay? But is it going to be hard for everyone?
Right. So, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As the brother mentioned, that it is a part that when a person goes from this stage of this worldly life to the other world, it is a difficult process. But in the riwayas and the traditions, it has been mentioned that for the believers, it is like smelling a flower. Right, a flower.
Mm-hmm.
When you smell it, it's sweet and it's the smell is fragrant. But for the disbeliever, it is like divine punishment. And even for some believers who are going to be punished by Allah Subhanahu
yes.
wa Taala, or who have certain acts that that have not been purified through their istighfar and they're seeking tawbah from Allah Subhanahu wa Taala, they are going to suffer some punishment during the process of their souls being taken to the other world.
Okay.
And so we have this verse of the Holy Quran, Suratul Qaf, verse number 19, which speaks about specifically the process of Sakaratul Maut.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, وَجَاءَتْ سَكَرَةُ الْمَوْتِ بِالْحَقِّ ذَلِكَ مَا كُنْتَ مِنْهُ تَحِيدُ.
All right.
The verse says, then the agony of death brings the truth. This is what you used to shun.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's speaking to everyone. That for everyone, there is a difficulty in the process of
death,
giving death. But
right.
We have from the traditions, we know that the good people, the prophets, the Aima, alayhimus salam, and the noble ones are going to be given an easy passage.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
All right?
But what will happen? وَنُفِخَ فِي السُّورِ ذَلِكَ يَوْمُ الْوَعِيدِ وَجَاءَتْ كُلُّ نَفْسٍ مَعَهَا سَائِقٌ وَشَهِيدٌ لَقَدْ كُنْتَ فِي غَفْلَةٍ مِنْ هَذَا فَكَشَفْنَا عَنْكَ غِطَاءَكَ فَبَصَرُكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ.
Mm-hmm.
So this entire process of veils being taken off your eyes.
All
so
right.
Because you are going into another stage in your life,
yes.
Those veils will be taken away from you, from your eyes, and you will be able to see realities as they truly are. And so it entails a sort of difficulty, and sakarat al-maut, the literal meaning is that it is a sort of intoxication.
All right.
Sakara,
yes.
The literal meaning is intoxication.
Intoxication, that's right.
Yes, because of the huge pain that people will suffer at this stage, it makes their bodies intoxicated. It seems
right.
That they
numb.
Are...
That's
yes,
right. Okay.
Numb
that's right.
From the pain. And
from
so
the
it
pain,
is
that's right.
Huge pain.
Okay.
And this Quranic terminology is basically highlighting the same concept.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Okay.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
So, Sheikh Fadai, are there any actions to do by some other people rather than yourself, okay? For example, the people who are burying you or something like that, to make this stage an easier way for you?
Of course.
For example, your parents, your wife, your children, something like that?
You know, we have some advice in our riwayats. For example, we are told to recite Quran.
Uh-huh.
The one is dying. You know, sometimes it is clear for us that the one is dying. These are the last moments. It's better to recite Quran in front of him, beside him, or put Quran on his chest when the one is dying. These are the words that attract the kinds of kindness of the angel of death.
Mm-hmm.
When the angel is taking the soul of this one, organ by organ, and maybe it is supposed to be hard for him. I'll talk about that. Why should it be hard? Hard. When it is supposed to be hard because of his previous actions, but by some action like reciting Quran, like, you know, like putting Quran, this one, this angel, will be more kinder with him. And just think about some of the action that nowadays we see in some cemeteries. Playing music, collapsing.
I watched it too.
You're not helping him.
Okay.
You're just harming him.
By playing music or dancing or something like that. Okay.
No, we are not told to do that.
All right. You are not recommended.
Now he is done in this world. You should help him. You're just having fun for yourself.
All right.
And so the main question is that why? I want to answer this question. Why sakaratul maut? Why should we experience this kind of sakra or this special hardness, hardship? So, you know, the answer is that imagine a surgery. If the one has a tumor in the brain, I don't know, or in his stomach.
Yes.
So when he needs a surgery, and the surgery will be harder when the tumor is bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger tumor, the harder surgery.
All right.
That tumor is our sins.
Mm-hmm.
When I gathered a lot of sins, these like gathering a lot of viruses or infections in my body.
All right.
You know, we are gathering and collecting a lot of viruses and dirt and infection in our souls.
That's right.
Making that to a tumor. And when we are dying, the surgery starts.
All right.
That tumor should be taken out.
Mm-hmm.
So because you made that tumor bigger. Uh-huh. So your surgery should be harder.
That's right.
Why not?
Okay.
We shouldn't complain. You know, the angel is taking my soul harder than the other one.
All right.
Like the doctor who cut the stomach or cut the brain or skull of that one harder and more. You know, the doctor is not brutal. The doctor is kind.
Yes.
Doctor is helping him.
Yes.
The problem is from himself.
All right.
He didn't care about his health.
Mm-hmm.
So that is physical health. And now we're talking about spiritual health. So heart sakaratul maut is because of our sins. And God is cleaning us by that hardship. Yes, we can think now. We can start. We can think about our death. And now the time that we can make it easy.
Okay.
Not at that time. And
especially for those who are very much attached to the materialistic world.
Yes, exactly.
Leaving this world will be a very difficult one, okay?
Yes.
So because the soul is very much connected and affiliated with the mundane world, materialistic world, you know, the love for these attachments in this world.
As much as you make this connection stronger, cutting this connection
will be harder.
It is like that.
That's right.
Do not make it so strong. Yes, we are connected to material world, but use it as it's necessary.
Okay.
As much as it's necessary.
Yes.
Do not make it stronger than necessary.
So a spirit can be connected to materialistic world too.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, because when we are talking about materialistic, we are talking about physical things. But the spirit can have root in the materialistic world too, to be connected very much, so that separating the two will be...
Like different kinds of glue.
Uh-huh.
You want to attach something to other things.
All right.
What kind of glue you use?
Are you using? That's right.
Yes. When the glue is harder, cutting this connection will be harder. Soul and body is like that.
Okay, that's it. So, Shaykh Danish, now, one of the major questions is that, are there any deeds we must do in order to make our, we can say, separation from this world or the time of death a little bit easier for us?
Yes. In fact, in the riwayas, a lot of good deeds have been mentioned that make it easier for a person to die peacefully or not feel the same level or amount of pain.
All right.
So from the riwayas, we can say that silay rahim, meeting and doing good to your relatives, having a constant connection with your relatives is mentioned. Your good deeds towards your parents, your mother and your father. And even in one of the riwayas, it is mentioned that if a person's mother is not pleased with him and is not happy with that person, they will have a difficulty in giving and detaching themselves from this world.
Very good.
Then we have love for Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Uh-huh.
Love for Imam Ali alayhi salam is going to make it easy for a person, the believer, to die peacefully. Then going a lot for the ziyarah of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, or even performing the ziyarah of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam has been mentioned. So all of these good deeds, we see that a lot of them is about hukukun nas, right?
Yes.
Or hukuk al-imam. And because we say that hukukullah may be forgiven, but hukukun nas is what is going to be difficult for a person.
That's right.
Without the permission of that person. So the most important people after the Aima alayhimus salam are our parents.
Yes.
And so if we are respectful towards our parents, we perform the duties we owe them, it is going to make it easier for us to part from this world. Even some of the surahs of the Holy Quran have been mentioned. Suratul Yasin, Surah Yasin has been mentioned in the riwayas. Surah Safat specifically has been mentioned from Imam Al-Kazim alayhi salam, who says that reciting Surah Safat near a person who is going to or is feeling the sakarat al-maut is going to ease his pain. And so all of these are basically a connection from this world to the other world and have been narrated to us in the riwayah.
You know, there's a riwayah from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam that Shaykh Mufid narrated that once a young person was dying, he was in sakaratul maut. And it was very hard for him. You know, my brother mentioned the riwayah of parents,
that's right.
I remember that they asked Prophet to be beside that person in order to have an easier death.
Kind of death, that's right.
But Prophet was watching him, that it was very hard for him.
All right.
Prophet told him, say la ilaha illallah. He couldn't say. And repeated that. He couldn't say. Prophet asked him, does he have any mother? The mother is alive or not? They said, yes, he does. Prophet said, go and bring the mother. They brought the mother, and Prophet asked him, are you satisfied with him? The mother said, no.
Mm-hmm.
He was not good with me. Because of that, the mouth was so hard for him.
Wow.
Prophet asked him, forgive your son.
Ask her,
that's right. Yes, ask her, the mother, forgive the son.
That's right.
After she, the mother, forgave the child just because of Prophet,
wow.
just for the respects of Prophet, she forgave the son. She could die very easily. And the secret of mouth was taken from him.
Mm.
That is the position and status of our parents.
All right.
Even
okay.
affecting on our death.
That's right. Respect the parents. Respect the parents. Kiss the hands of your mothers. Kiss the feet of your father. This is what mentioned, you know, okay, in Kitab Jam al-Sa'adat by the late Nawawi, that if your mother is dissatisfied with you, Sakarat al-Maut will be really difficult for you, okay?
Yeah.
So mother has great status in your life, okay? So, and make them happy, inshallah, and the go to your mothers, you know, and kiss their hands and let them be happy with you, inshallah. You will have easier time of death. So this is mother. Thank you very much, Sheikh Fadai, Sheikh Danish, for a nice elaboration regarding Sakarat al-Maut. It was very kind of you. Thank you much, dear listeners. For any information or more information, please visit our website, iranradio.ir. Also send us your questions and comments at iranradio@sinairabi.ir email. So till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Warm salam from the heart of Tehran. Whether you're tuning in from across town or across continents, you're listening to Iran Radio, and here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as al-Hazan in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. Let's take a look at what's coming up. First, it's news time. Then we move to today's special. Up next, another feature from our radio productions. Following that, don't miss Hadith of the Day. So stay with us. The news is next.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Health Organization warns about Gaza's deteriorating health conditions, saying most of the territory's hospitals and health centers are just partially functioning. Protesters in Venezuela condemn U.S. military's recent seizure of an oil tanker, declaring their readiness to defend their independence against foreign intervention. And at least two people are killed in a shooting attack at Brown University in the U.S. state of Rhode Island. Officials say attacker is still at large. Hello, everyone, and welcome to World News. when Israel has carried out fresh attacks in Gaza in further violation of the ceasefire with Hamas. Southern cities of Khan Yunis and Rafah are among areas that have witnessed new strikes. And to hear more on Israeli violations in Gaza, we're there joined by our correspondent, Ghada Ibrahim, out of Deir al-Balah.
Since the beginning of the U.S. broken ceasefire agreement, from time to time, we are still hearing the Israeli artillery shelling targeting the eastern bars of Deir al-Balah city, the eastern bars of Al-Maghazi and Al-Ibrej refugee camp while we are here in the middle area, and also the eastern bars of Khan Yunis city, which was the focal point of the Israeli attack since the beginning of the ceasefire agreement. To the eastern bars of Gaza city as well, the Israeli attacks are continuous on the eastern bars of Al-Sha'af neighborhood, the eastern bars of Al-Tufah and Al-Shija'iyah, and in addition to this, the northern parts of Jabalia refugee camp and the northern parts of Beit Lahia as well. In the past 24 hours, we have witnessed 8 Palestinians killed as a result of Israeli attacks on different areas. One Palestinian man or young man was killed in a Sudanese area in the north.